You're listening to Studies in the Book of James. If you'd like more resources like this, or you're in the Kansas City area and would like to connect, you can find us at thebridgekc.church.
I remember my own graduation. It's been a lot of decades, but I remember driving home from my high school graduation having two parallel thoughts, one being there will be cake, which is a big value of mine, and another thought, which was, I don't know as much as I thought I would by now. Like, I got this piece of paper, and it's signed, because I checked right away, but I don't feel any different than I did before. It was, I had the piece of paper, but I realized there were things that I just did not know. And as a grad who was working my way into adulthood, I was discovering that real life is very different than our academic life. For years, I had gone to school, and I knew that the test was on this day, and if I studied up until that day, it would have an effect on my test, and if I did well on that test, I could move on, and if I didn't, I had to go back. But you knew when things were coming. And then you get into real life, and that's not how it works. You can't always tell when the next test is. And our most common reaction to testing in our life is, wow, I didn't see that coming. If I did see that coming, I would have prepared a little bit better. Sometimes those tests come from the natural friction of life, of just living around people that are no more redeemed than you are, and so that causes problems. Sometimes those tests are from the enemy, and things get thrown in our way that are not the will of God, and you've got to navigate them. And sometimes those tests are even the kindness of God as he presses back on us a little bit to see what we're made of. Book of Job is one of the most fascinating books to me. I was telling the first service, it's long, and I'm fascinated with it. At the rate I'm going through James, pray I never start a verse-by-verse series through Job. Those of you that are in your 30s and 40s would die in the book of Job because I would never get through it. But it's so interesting. We think it's just about a guy who goes through a hard time. And in reality, it's way more nuanced than this. And he makes this comment about the idea of being tested. This is how he regards it. Job 7, 17 and 18. What is man that you make so much of him? He almost echoes the words of the Proverbs. Who is man that you are mindful of him? And that you set your heart on him, visit him every morning, and test him every moment. He saw the testing of God and the press back of life and those challenges you don't see almost within the affection of God to press back on us and see what we're made of. Life is not a race of well-spaced hurdles. It's a marathon punctuated by a series of unexpected events. Stock markets crash. Houses burn down. Life gets hard. And if you turn into the local news and if you take away local sports and the weather, it's basically one story after another of people saying, wow, I didn't see that coming. Because that's what life is made of. Formal education is based around the idea of information. If you get all the information right and you hold it until Friday when you take the test, you're going to do well. And then you graduate and you realize that real life takes way more than information. It requires wisdom. Information tells us what happened. Wisdom addresses the ultimately more important question of, now that that's happened, what do I do? How do I respond to the tornado? How do I interact after the car crash? What do I do when the guy behind me wins the lottery and I'm left standing with my bag of Cheetos? What happens? How is my heart positioned that way? That's why maturity relates to wisdom in a way that information does not. Particularly in an information society. We can get information anywhere. It's the cheapest resource we possibly have. We have almost gotten to the point where there's no excuse for having to say, I don't know anymore. Because whatever you don't know, you can probably find out quickly. Great debate sprung up in our car among my boys and I the other day about how far it was to the moon. Important things, you know. And Scout, who's 4, is pretty convinced it's about 10 minutes. And I don't know, but I don't think it's 10 minutes. So at a stoplight, I'm able to grab my phone and no, it's 200,000 miles to the, you know, Scout. I knew that. You didn't. And he's arguing with me. Yeah, you can still get there in 10 minutes. He's convinced. But there's no real reason for going, yeah, I don't know anymore. But there's still reasons for saying, I don't know what to do. I've got all the information, but I don't know how to respond. I don't know how to act. I don't know how to process this place that the Lord has me. This is why the writer of Proverbs wrote what he wrote in chapter 4, verse 7. The New King James Version says, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And in all you're getting, get understanding. There's a reason that we associate wisdom with the elderly, because often it takes time to actually acquire it. And they've had more of an opportunity to have it. I have more information than my grandparents ever had. But I'm still trying to achieve the level of wisdom that they operated in, because it involves time. We see in the Bible what seemed wise to a young man seemed very different, or what wisdom seemed to him seemed very different later in age. You look at Joseph, who as a young man, daddy's favorite, gets the coat nobody gets, has a dream. In the dream, all of his brothers bow down to him. And in his youthful exuberance, what he thought would be wise would be, oh, I got to tell him about this dream. That should be the wise thing to do. And he does that. And of course, we know the story. He gets him thrown in a well by his brothers, sold into human traffickers, and he's taken to another country. 20 years later, that same young man in godly wisdom is effectively the chief operations officer of a foreign land, managing an economy into prosperity during a time of famine. You go, what happened that he thought it was a wise thing to do to share this dream? We all look at that and go, don't tell the dream, Joseph. He thought that was wisdom. 20 years later, what happened? 20 years of obedience that developed wisdom in his life. That's the difference between a boy bragging about a dream and the wise man that he became. And because wisdom is so important, if you're running a country or running a family or just trying to run to catch up, we want to make sure that what we are calling wisdom is what God calls wisdom. Because even our own wisdom, if it seems logical to us, can fail us miserably. Have you ever thought you were doing the right thing and had it blow up in your face? There's this passage in Proverbs that honestly, this haunts me when I think about making decisions. Proverbs 14:12 says, there is a way that seems right to a man, in the end it leads to death. That's terrifying. There is a way of doing things that you think is right, but ultimately leads to death. Every time you read of someone being lost in the wilderness or falling off a cliff, you're hearing a story about someone who thought they were doing the right thing up until it was obvious they weren't. They thought they were operating in wisdom right until the rope broke and the wheels fell off. And there is a way of thinking that seems right to us that ultimately leads to death. So as we get back into our series here on James, as I count, I believe we're on week 10. If you missed the early weeks, James is talking about what it means to be Christian and be consistent so that your faith matches your behavior, so you're not living a double life. I don't think anybody really wants to do that. I don't have the energy to live two lives. I'm doing all I can to pedal and keep up with the life that I have. And so he is teaching us kindly how to align our faith with our behavior. And in the latter part of the third chapter, he dives into this idea of wisdom. And read this very carefully, because it talks about two different kinds. James 3, 13 to 18. Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false in the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but it is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, and then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. In this passage, five short verses, James talks about wisdom twice and very, very differently. It almost makes you wonder as you're reading this, is he talking about the same thing? He is not. He's talking about earthly wisdom, the way we normally operate, what seems like good sense to you at your first reaction. And then he is talking about the wisdom that comes down from above, kind of a divine thinking assistance, or how God thinks about wisdom. Most of us, we were singing that song earlier, It Is Well With My Soul. We struggle singing It Is Well With My Soul because it is not right with our minds. And we're still using a system of wisdom that is tied to what he calls earthly wisdom rather than wisdom from God. Why does he go through the trouble of using the same word two completely different ways? Like, does anybody ever do that? Well, yeah, actually, we do the same thing. It's called a homograph. It is a word spelled the same that can mean, and it's pronounced the same, but it can mean different things. It's like the word, we use the word fair. When we say fair, we mean a lot of things. When we say fair, we can talk about an event, or we can talk about being reasonable, or we can talk about someone's appearance. And we can use it back to back, and we don't find that strange. Would you like to go to the fair? Yeah, that sounds fair. When you get there, you say, you look fair. And even that can mean two different things. How do I look? Fair. Or you look fair. You know, it's the same word. Means completely different things. So that's what he's doing there when he uses the word wisdom, as he contrasts, not just, it's a little nuanced differently, it's completely different. Some of you are struggling because you have latched on to earthly wisdom and it makes perfect sense to you. And he's going, I've got a different way of thinking about the problem you're in, and it's wisdom, but it's not that thing you've grabbed onto. And he points to the fact that wisdom from God is, in the first and the last verse, he talks about it being displayed a couple different ways. He talks about it being displayed by works and in the harvest that it produces. Let's read that first verse, verse 13 again. Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. Then after talking about earthly and godly wisdom for a bit, he closes the passage in verse 18, and he says, and the harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. What is his point about godly wisdom? It's twofold. First point is that God's wisdom, he's not just speaking about mental ascent. It finds its way to the surface of our lives by our conduct and our behavior as displayed in meekness. When he talks about wisdom, he's talking about meekness. If we have jacked up the meaning of the word wisdom, we have really messed up the word meekness. Because we've interpreted meekness as weakness and not saying anything and just cowering. That's not how it is meant. It is meant to, in strength, restrain yourself from exerting your rights in meekness. Matthew 5:5, Jesus is teaching, and he says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. We hear that. That sounds so contrary. We think, how does the meek guy end up with everything? We are taught that fortune favors the bold and that the people who take charge and do things are the ones that make things happen and good things come to those people, but meek people get forgotten. This, as Jesus would have taught it, was not a foreign idea to those that he was teaching because they understood the Old Testament and knew it better than we do. Psalm 37, this is actually mentioned first, verses 10 and 11, where the psalmist says, in just a little while, the wicked will be no more. Though you look carefully at his place, he will not be there. But the meek shall inherit the land and delight themselves in abundant peace. When Jesus said the meek will inherit the earth, he's actually teaching eschatology, or he's teaching about the end times. He was saying those that live a meek life at the end of the age will inherit everything. So how do you know that? Because he's referencing Psalms here, and it's talking about when the wicked shall be no more. And if you look around, you know that's not true. Don't look around in here. I'm just saying in general, okay? In general, you look around and there's plenty of wicked to go around. And so if the wicked still exists, it is not the time yet that the meek inherit the earth, but he says that they will, and it would be wise to live our lives for that day and not just for tomorrow. The wicked will be done away with one day. We're not there yet. The meek have not yet inherited the earth, but there is coming a day when the wicked will be no more, and those who have restrained themselves and shown themselves to be meek and humble, displaying godly wisdom, will inherit everything. Most of what we celebrate as wisdom is not really biblical wisdom. It's just shrewd negotiations. One of my sons bought a car this week. I went along to help, and you know the drill. There's an asking price, and then there's what you want to pay, right? And I think we landed at a good price. I paid less than he was asking. You know it's good negotiation when you walk away saying, I would have paid more, and he lets you go thinking, I would have taken less, and everybody is kind of mutually miserable with the deal. That's shrewd negotiations, okay? That's not what God is referring to. He doesn't care what you paid for the car. He's more concerned with how you live your life with the overarching understanding that one day the wicked will be no more and those that have been meek will inherit the earth, and to live that way is wise. We inherit the earth based on godly wisdom as displayed by meekness in situations when you have every right in the world to exert your rights and you would choose not to for the good of the kingdom. There is more godly wisdom in the one who treats a bad restaurant waiter with kindness and with gentleness and meekness than there is in someone who negotiates a good price on a Volkswagen. That's not biblical wisdom. The wisdom is in the meekness. Meekness will cause your relationships to flourish. Some of you are in difficult marriages and you're struggling. And as you struggle with one another, the grace wears out. And you find the things that you had grace and meekness for early in the marriage, you don't have anymore. I've sat with couples who are on the brink of divorce, and you go, what's the big problem? And she starts talking about how he takes the trash out wrong. That's a true story. And you're like, yeah, I don't think that's the big deal, but you are so out of meekness that you are angry about every little thing, and it's a big thing. And he says, no, be meek. Wisdom lies in meekness. Those who display God's meekness are not only proving themselves wise, they are preparing to receive a harvest sown in righteousness. Earthly wisdom might win short races, but godly wisdom produces a harvest of righteousness in our lives and in our families, and that production takes time. Earthly wisdom wants to make a point and wants to argue in the moment to the right information, but godly wisdom makes a person more like Jesus. I'm like you. I want to be right, but I really want to be like Jesus. And if that's what wisdom is, that's what I want to go after. So back to James 3, he steps further into describing this idea of what earthly wisdom is. Understand, this is the system that most of us operate most of the time. He's talking about how we think about making decisions and being wise.
What he's been talking about is something that we normally operate in earthly wisdom, but how he describes it is very, very stark. James 3, 14 to 16. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but it is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. So he talks about wisdom that is of the world, and he describes it in pretty stark circumstances. He says, first of all, it is based in self-promotion. It is based in putting your best foot forward, even at the expense of the truth. Now, I love social media. I use social media. But one of the things that social media has brought us that probably our parents or our grandparents never really even thought of about was the idea of our own personal brand. And the idea of promoting a version of ourself publicly that is markedly different from reality. And in that, we slip into this idea of self-promotion and look at us and look not only just look at us, but look at a version of us that we have curated because it's not real. And we have people think of their Instagram feed as a representation of themselves, but they even admit it's not the real them. And pretty soon there's a gap between reality and the lies that they're feeding everyone, known as their brand, how they want to be seen. Just a little cooler, just a little smarter, just a little faster, just a little more together than they really are. And we encourage one another in it. Oh, you look great. Your life looks like everything's wonderful. And we all encourage one another because in many cases we're doing the same thing. We're not called to maintain a personal brand or a falsified image of ourselves in public. It is actually not wise. God does not call self-promotion wisdom. He looks at it very, very differently. Now understand, God is not against Instagram. I don't think he really cares. But he's got an issue with our self-promotion, not because he wants to smack us down, but because he knows that the cousin to self-promotion is humiliation when the bubble bursts and when reality is seen and we are not what we were supposed to be. Proverbs 25, 6 and 7 says, do not put yourself forward in the king's presence or stand in the place of the great or make your life look better than it really is. For it is better to be told, come up here, than to be put lower in the presence of a noble. Self-promotion on Instagram, around the water cooler, with a college buddy over the phone, where you make life sound rosier than it really is. None of that is wise before the Lord, because the truth has a long shelf life, and it has a way of finding its way out. And the minute you take a break from promoting your personal brand, reality comes in, and we are embarrassed because we've promoted something that we're not. The wisdom of man says, promote yourself, and it's by what James calls bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. And this is an issue among all people. Pastors struggle with this. 10 days ago, went to New York to gather with 25 pastors. And we're from all over the world, all different tribes, come together and just be together and talk together and pray together. Good-hearted men and women, I love these people. They are dear. But even among them, there's this tension of when you meet one another, to get to know one another, and so what's your church like? And people find creative ways to ask the question that nobody wants to actually ask. But so what are you running? How big is your church? For years, I've told people the same answer when I've been pastoring. How large is your church? Oh, we're under 1,000. What does that say? It doesn't even answer the question. And some of them don't even understand that I'm trying to avoid the question. And they'll ask it again. It's just human nature to compare and do that. But it's not wise. Why does God press back against self-promotion? He isn't against you getting noticed. God is vital and is instrumental in getting people noticed at times. But to self-promote stands in direct contrast with meekness and inheriting the earth. And he says, I don't want you to go down that road. It's not wise as I define wise. He goes on to describe earthly wisdom as using the word earthly. Well, of course it's earthly. We're on earth. What else would it be? But what he's saying is it's the wisdom of man leads an eternal being to have about a 70-year earthly perspective. The wisdom of the earth is short-sighted for a being that's going to live forever. Now, I have had the challenge of trying to teach 3 boys so far out of our 10 kids how to drive. I say the challenge because, as God is my witness, I have failed miserably. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should teach it. And I wasn't very good at it. So by the time we got to the 3rd son, it was straight to driving school. Let's just save a lot of heart attacks and just send you to driving school. But one of the things that was the hardest thing for me with them or any new driver is going down 435 at 65, 70 miles an hour, and they're looking 5 feet ahead of the hood of the car. And they're correcting based on where they are, 5 feet ahead. You know, you're doing this, like going down the lane. I'm like, no, go look further down the road. You're going to be there in a minute. Don't look 5 feet. You're going so fast that nothing happening 5 feet in front of you matters. You got to look down the road. Many of us make the decisions of our life as eternal beings thinking 5 or 6 years down the road, even 50 or 60 years down the road is too short-sighted for a being that will live forever. Even if you're thinking I've got 70, 80, 90 years on the planet, you're thinking too short-sighted. You're making decisions looking 5 feet ahead of the car. And you're going to find yourself at the end of the age going, I wish I'd have used a different kind of wisdom. How wisely do we spend our time in light of the fact that we will live with the ramifications of that forever? How wisely do we spend our money in light of the fact that we're going to live with the ramifications of that forever? Because that is the kind of life we're living. Jesus said something in the Gospels that irritated the religious people, which actually describes most of the Gospels. But he says in John 8, 51 and 52, truly, truly I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death. The Jews said to him, now that we know you have a demon, it's like you said that, now we surely know you're possessed. He's like, no. If you do what he says, you live forever. Why are you making decisions as if you're going to die tomorrow or even in 10 years? If we only live 70 years, then survival of the fittest and winner take all makes complete sense. But if we live with sights on eternity with the idea that the meek inherit the earth one day, that gives a very different spin on our decision making and on our wisdom. So he says, earthly wisdom is self-promotion. It's short-sighted. It's earthly. And then he goes on to call it unspiritual and demonic. Now, people have a lot of tolerance when the pastor starts talking about angels. They like that. We like angels. We glue little plastic ones to the dashboard of our car. We hang them from our Christmas trees. We read books about them. We watch TV shows about them. We're all good with angels. People get a little nervous when you start talking about demons. Well, I don't really believe in demons. Well, how'd you buy into angels? If you look biblically, there's as good a case for demons as there is for angels. But we're uncomfortable with them. Again, back to Job. There's so much in Job. And he tells about this encounter he has with a demonic being. Let me just read this to you. Job 4, 15 to 16. This is not hyperbole. He's describing what happened to him. A spirit glided past my face. The hair of my flesh stood up. I stood still, but I could not discern its appearance. A form was before my eyes. There was silence, and then I heard a voice. He's in a room by himself, and he feels this thing, this demonic force, brush against him. He's like, I know it's there. I can't see it, but the hair on my arms is standing up. Why do we not see that level of demonic activity in the world that we live in if demons are real? Some people have had those kind of encounters. Most of them have not. I never have. Maybe we don't need it because we're so immersed in their activity that we trend towards their way of thinking so often that they don't even have to show up. Demonic influence doesn't seem that strong if we're agreeing with it. Does a demon need to brush up against us to influence us when we're readily consuming everything they produce through our phones and our televisions? Now, some of you are thinking, well, I really don't see demons as an influence in my life. Well, maybe you don't, but it could also be in your agreeing with them. You don't even notice the pushback. Does a fish that is swimming with the current understand that there's a current? No, they just think they can swim really fast. Does someone agreeing with demonic influence believe there's demonic influence? No, they just think they're really smart. 1 Corinthians 10, 21, Paul writes this. He writes this for a reason. He writes it because it was happening. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the table of the Lord and of the table of demons. He was saying people are interacting with, on a conscious or a subconscious level, with the demonic realm, and they're agreeing with it, and in their agreement with it, they cannot agree with the Lord. Am I trying to inspire you to live lives of fear? No, I'm just pointing out that so much of the influence of the world around us is not of God. In fact, it's of darkness, and as we align with it, we begin to think it's normal, and in normalizing demonic thought and demonic activity, we take on earthly wisdom, and we think about things in a completely unbiblical way. And let's just talk frankly about entertainment for just a second here. Okay? Growing up, remember watching the Lucille Ball Show? Remember Lucy and Desi had separate beds? Remember that? They had separate, like, little twin beds. I could never figure out where little Ricky came from because mom and dad had separate beds. You fast forward into our day, nobody sleeps in separate beds. People who shouldn't be in the same bedroom sleep in the same bed. People who shouldn't even talk to each other sleep in the same bed. It's a completely different world. And it's allowed into our homes, and more importantly, displayed on screens in front of our children. It becomes the norm, and it's not healthy. It's actually an evil mindset that we align ourselves with, and then we wonder, why can we not think about this in a godly way? Because we've actually sat at the table with demons for a couple hours in front of our television and then wondered why we don't think straight. Now, okay, before anybody write me emails about legalism, I've got a filter on my email. Those go right to trash. No, I mean, okay, I grew up on the fringe. I understand a little bit about legalism. I could actually use a little more than I have right now. I'm not talking about legalism. I'm talking about pumping things into our living rooms that are admittedly ungodly because we find them entertaining. And then wondering why we think differently about relationships than we do. It's because we're sitting at the table with demons and we walk away going, oh, that wasn't bad. And it affects the decisions that we make. And we go, yeah, maybe I'm not thinking about this the right way. No, you're thinking about this like a demon. Because you have availed yourself of their wisdom rather than the wisdom of God. So he talks about earthly wisdom and just how different it is than wisdom that he calls wisdom from above or godly wisdom. And I just want to hit this really quickly. James 3:17, but the wisdom from above first is pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. It's so interesting how little of that explanation of wisdom has to do with being right and how much it has to do with our hearts. James talks about godly wisdom and relates it to purity and a peaceful bend of our heart rather than being right or winning arguments. That's where it became obvious that James is using another kind of definition for wisdom, because godly wisdom has more to do with our motivation than with our knowledge. We think we're wise if we know all the right things, but we can't possibly know everything. There will always be things we're not aware of. There's always missing information. Does that mean we can't be wise? No, it means we can be wise because godly wisdom can operate with partial knowledge of the facts so long as the motivations are correct. There's a remarkable story in 1 Kings chapter 3. It starts at a time of cultural upheaval. Solomon is the king after David. People are worshiping God, but they're worshiping God at the cultic centers of worship. So they're out offering sacrifices to God where they used to offer to their false gods because they haven't built a place to worship their God yet. People are kind of doing whatever they want. It's a little bit the Wild West, the Old Testament version. And in the context, Solomon has a dream. And in the dream, God comes to him and asks him one of the most revealing questions that God can ask a human being, which is, what do you want? Think about it. God says, what do you want? And Solomon starts to answer him, and he answers him with kind of a long, rambling answer, because when God comes to you in a dream, you talk slowly. And he's answering him. He talks about the fact that you made my father king, and now here I am. I am a king. And he brings up this issue, 1 Kings 3:7. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of David, my father. Although I am but a little child, I do not know how to go out or come in. He's like, here's the deal, God. I am now the king. I don't really know what to do. I'm in this position. I've got as much information as anybody else. But remember, godly wisdom is about how to operate. He goes, I don't know how to come in or go out. I don't know how to be what you've called me to be. Some of you have been drawn into situations in families or at work or in relationships, and you're going, I don't know how I got here, and I don't know how to be. I need godly wisdom, not just facts. I need how to hold my heart and how to respond to other people. He doesn't ask for a magic wand. He doesn't ask for a trap door. Can I be reassigned to something easier? He asks for wisdom. 1 Kings 3:9, give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may discern between good and evil, for who is able to govern this, your great people? And God is so moved by his request that he could ask for anything, that he asked for wisdom from God, that God responds in verse 12, behold, I now do according to your word. Behold, I give you a wise and discerning mind, so that none like you has been before you, and none like you shall arise after you. God determined that Solomon would be the wisest man who ever lived. Even by today's standards, Solomon was wiser, more wise than we are. Think about it. We have more information than he did. We have a lot more information. Most of you on the back of a napkin could draw a more accurate map of the world than Solomon had at that day. Because you've got information he didn't have, but he had wisdom that we don't have, because that's what he asked from God. Scripture, the passage goes on to illustrate how his motivation was tied to his wisdom. Not going to read the verse, but he talks about finding where a child should live. Two mothers were arguing about this child, and the scripture says that he was able to decide rightly because he was motivated by justice. And his correct motivations gave him God's wisdom.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our 14-part series on the book of James. If you're in the Kansas City area, we would love to meet you. Check us out at thebridgekc.com. Church.